On to our next panel. Very happy to have Quanta Services here with both CEO Duke Austin and CFO Jayshree Desai. Happy that we actually picked up coverage just a couple weeks ago too.
Okay.
A lot of, you know, a lot of connection to a lot of the other things that we work on as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Duke, it'd be great to get a quick intro of the company.
Sure.
Quick intro of the investment case since most of the folks here are investors, and then we'll go into a discussion.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Steve.
You bet.
First, we have a lot of people in the storm out there, so loss of life and pretty tragic. You know, I think we all are watching them, make sure they get home safely, and wish them well here and all of our people out there. It's certainly something that we value with the industry is to get this up and fixed and minimize life and everything else out there. It's hard to talk great about something when I know what's going on and back out there. Anyways, Quanta itself really is based upon craft skill labor. That was the nucleus of the company, my background, and much of how we built the business and the strategy. When you look at our macro markets and the things we do, it's really utility back to the capital, the OpEx, CapEx of utility customers that you can see it's visible. Technology, as you see data centers and our ability to the capital within the technology space with data centers and things like that with the Cupertino acquisition, and then our generation business, which is a renewable business around solar, wind, batteries. Those macro drivers are really what's driving the business today, and all that's built around craft. Yes, we have technology in the business. We self-perform 85% of our business, which is, I believe, is a differentiator in what we do, is that self-perform capabilities. It allows us to look at, you know, complex projects and give certainty to the client and ourselves. Those solutions matter. I think, you know, when you look at supply chains today, they're different than they were before. You need to move in early. We're in the projects early, so we can help with the ultimate client, whether it be technology, utility, developer, the early nature of us being in the business. We are not an E&C. We are a solution provider, and it's a big difference in the way we look at it. I think we can play both sides of that. We don't really. When you look at a combined cycle plant or a nuclear plant, that's not us. We can certainly build one, not with risk. We just don't like output risk to them. It's certainly something we'll stay away from as a company. You know, I think that lastly, why you invest in Quanta, really the macro markets, our ability to execute on strategies that we've done in the past, and then how we deploy free cash. I think much of, you know, the top growth, the future growth will be how well we deploy that free cash into the macro markets that we see and follow the strategies that we've laid out. That's us. Steve, and happy to answer any questions.
Yeah. No, that's pretty clear and simple description of the company. I know, Jayshree, maybe you just wanna do a quick kind of financial view as well of kind of, you know, the history of performance and just kind of what you're expecting going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we have been, we've been a company that over the last 20+ years have been growing our bottom line, double digits. We're in the right macro market space where we think going forward. We put this out in our investor deck in 2022, and we stand behind those growth rates in each of our segments, our electric power segment, and our renewable segment, as well as our UU&I segment. We do feel that some of the macro trends have actually just gotten better since we put those trends, put those numbers out there. We do also believe very strongly that our return on invested capital will continue to improve. We've been focused on that, especially since Duke took over CEO in 2016. The our ROIC has doubled in that timeframe. We see opportunities to continue improving that. The Cupertino acquisition, the Blattner acquisition are all part of those strategies to drive that ROIC. We're also very. Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. Is that better? We're also, our balance sheet is a critical part of our growth story. We've kept a flexible balance sheet throughout our history, and we continue, that'll be continue to be a focus for us. Our leverage, we look at our leverage profile, and we want to stay, remain investment grade. As Duke talked about, the next few years, we do think the free cash flow generation of the company will be significant. And we see opportunities to deploy that, but we're going to be very disciplined how we do that. The organic opportunities in front of us are significant, but we also see a good M&A pipeline of the type of companies that we like, which are strong management teams with family founders who have a history and track record of being in the space. And then, you know, depending on what drives the highest ROIC, there's also opportunities if we wanted to reinvest in ourselves. So those are our three categories of deployment of capital, and given the strategies in front of us, we think that's going to be a true advantage for us going forward.
Great. So maybe Duke or Jayshree, you could talk to a little bit what you're hearing, I guess, from your customer base in terms of capital deployment. We're seeing, I think, obviously, you know, data center focus and resiliency. So just when you, I know we're heading into typically the utility capital refreshment season, CapEx plan season the next quarter or two, just what are the areas that you're seeing the most focus for new investment? And then just, is there anything utilities are pulling back on to help kind of manage all this? Because it just, I mean, maybe they can do everything, but you know, you wonder, do they need to kind of pull back on something?
Yeah, I mean, when we look at it, I kind of get to say anything because it's regulatory, and I just, you know, from my standpoint, what we see is just the demand. It's a demand issue, supply issue, more demand than supply. And the one thing that I don't think is an industry that we can do is sit and wait. You can't have selective urgency. Just sit. Your technologies, when you look at that, the capital there is $200 billion or so a year. A lot of that is getting deployed in infrastructure and how we see that. And so when I'm looking at it, it's breathing down the necks of all of us to build. And I think we can stop and start and stop and start and go in a circle, but I don't think that's going to work. And so what we see is utility CapEx budgets are moving up across the board. You may have one that's flat or an area that's regulatory issues, but they're moving up. And they're moving up on just a traditional sense. I don't think you've seen the demand of data centers at the macro level, the gigs, the hyperscalers really hit yet. In the budgets. That's how I see it. As that stacks on what you already see, you'll continue to see these budgets move up. That's against a regulatory environment that wants, you know, parity at the rate where, you know, look, you still have to be cognizant of the consumer. And if you can build it where the consumer benefits or the ultimate consumer benefits or there's no degradation in rates or anything around it, that's the trick. And it's not easy to change something that's been done the same way for decades. And so rate bases are going to look different, I think, when you start adding in scale, hyperscale, because you don't want assets that are sitting out and, you know, not producing revenue. I mean, you're not going to spend the capital. So that's the dilemma, Steve, that everyone's faced and why you've seen a stop and start. I do think there's rate structures being, you know, talked about that are, you know, beneficial to the rate payer or at least at parity to the rate payer where it doesn't. The redundancy of a data center, they want uptime 100%, causes some issues. And you could get stranded assets. Yes, I mean, that's something that's a risk. But much like when you look at the pipeline midstream, you have a take or pay, or there's ways that you can get around, you know, some of the risk. And I think as you see the regulatory environment de-risk, the utilities, and everyone gets their head around how to build these rate bases that make sense to technology, it'll fall really nicely. We're seeing signs of that today, and certainly talking on both sides of that as we The Cupertino acquisition allowed us really to have conversations at the technology level as well as at the utility level and, you know, collaborate with both for the right outcome. And that collaboration for us is key as we plan that median between the two. But I see nothing but more demand and less supply. So the one thing we can't do is sit. And even if you get something that's off-grid, even if you were to build, you know, take a, you know, nuke and say, that's my nuke, which I don't believe you'll see. I think it'll be more virtual. But if you do that, it doesn't do anything for the supply. It just means it moved. And you still got way more demand. So in the gigs in most areas. So we continue to see, you know, robust macro markets.
And so from your company standpoint, just on the demand opportunity, maybe you could just talk to, you know, how that benefits sure. Quanta, and then talk a little more about the opportunity on the Cupertino deal.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Yeah, when we look at the demand from technology, it's primarily they want renewables. You might see some gas, even new, but they want renewables behind that, where it's you're continuing to, you might use it for backup generation and things like that. But solar, wind, batteries are certainly something the technology wants to supply to these data centers. We build about 25% of renewables in North America as it stands. So the generation piece of it for us is big. Then all the interconnections along with that, the transmission that's involved with all these interconnections, substations, every battery, almost I would say 90%, maybe even bigger, of batteries as well as solar, wind, have an interconnection with a substation and a line to some degree. So that's all things that whether we build the plant or not, we're typically building the interconnections in the substations. So we're in the cheapest form of, I mean, we talk a lot about generation. The cheapest form of generation is transmission. The more transmission you can build, the cheaper generation is because you move it, and it allows more capacity to move. So I continue to say, with anything, you need a lot of transmission in this country. Europe is certainly something that they have big corridors that move across large territories. We continue to struggle building transmission, both from regulatory environments and states and things like that. But we need transmission significantly in this country in order to get where we want to go with the transition.
And then at Cupertino, just talk to the opportunity there and kind of is it, you know, a company like that, you kind of say to yourself, well, why did they sell? Like what yeah. seems like the market's coming sure. to them, but maybe it's just the market's getting too big.
I mean, a family business, you know, you get it to a point and then it's risk on the backside of it. I come from a family business myself, and you see the opportunities and your people underneath you. It's a, you know, almost 100-year-old company that just sees, you know, the opportunity after opportunity, especially when technology is driving the bit. They grew up with technology, and much like Blattner, it was a 100-year-old business that grew up with renewables. And so as you grow up in these environments, there's a lot of trust that goes into this. And technology trust, that skill set of craft skill labor around the electrification, the low-voltage piece of it anyway, embedded in that whole environment. And when you start talking about the capital budget of $200 billion and how much of it, you know, that we think end-to-end solutions that we can provide to both on the utility side as well as that. It just allowed us a different customer base, I believe. There are a lot of synergies we haven't talked about, a lot of things that we believe we can do in the future where we can help both our current clients as well as technology, where you site, how you think about building transmission, what kind of generation, all those things that, you know, I feel like that's our competency. I'm not sure that it was getting met at that level, at the data center level, both to help the client too. So I liked it. I think for us, craft skill, something we know well, known the business for a decade or better. The management team that's in there now, known the family a long time. So it's just one where if we were going to build a platform out on data center capabilities, Electric is certainly something critical path for both the high voltage side, the interconnections, the generation, and then on into the center is the electric piece of it. It allows us, you know, what I consider just an end-to-end solution. We can move it farther right if we want to. A lot of opportunity there. And
when you say farther right, meaning?
It's not, you know, you could see a point where you move into mechanical, you take more of the center. I'm not saying we're doing that, but it certainly provides verticals that when you get asked by a client, can you do this? Will you do this? And then you keep on, you find yourself trying to deliver. And, you know, to me, it's like, how many times am I going to say no? So I think for us, it's like we should be hitting the yes button a lot more. I mean, it's exciting times. The industry is exciting. And for me, I see decades. And I think our growth and our strategies really have to, you know, say yes in many ways and get ourselves and get our heads different than it's ever been before, to where we're able to execute on different things and see the markets much, much different than we've ever seen before. The whole industry, we have to.
And just on Cupertino and just the data center opportunity, in terms of the craft, the skills to scale that up further and the people, is that something that would take a while to kind of build further? Or, you know, how quickly can you scale that up? I guess the question.
Yeah. I mean, they had a nice solar business inside of Cupertino. It was battery solar in the West and different client bases, some different client bases. So it'll allow us to scale that fairly quickly because of supply chain and the things that we do internally. The inside electric piece of the business, low voltage piece of the business, I think we had, you know, 700-800 people as well there that were, you know, probably inefficient. And I think we'll be able to take their platform, take our some of our internal resources and put with the platform. So I think that'll help us a bunch. It is a place where in the past we've said we're not concerned on labor, we're not concerned. We can, our colleges, all the things that we can do allow us to scale. And I'm still not worried about the high voltage piece, and I hope we get more. And I hope you hear me one day say we are at capacity. I doubt it. I still think that business, if we take the same approach with the colleges, with the things that we've done there, the apprentices, how we've done it, and take that curriculum, some of the things, and build that into the Cupertino business, it'll allow greater expansion. We'll invest in it quicker. We'll do some things there the same way we've done on the craft and other areas. And I you know, right now, yes, it's constrained. I do believe we can certainly mitigate some of that constraint.
Okay. I forgot to mention for folks who haven't been in here, we will do open up for questions at the end. So I think I've got two more. So on the renewables business, so there's been a number of companies that have had some execution issues in renewables. You've had, you know, very little. And just maybe you give some color on how you've been able to do that, and just how are you feeling about continuing to do that going forward? And maybe Jayshree, I know that's an area where you're trying to get the margins up. You know, do you have line of sight of achieving that?
You go first.
The short answer is yes, we have line of sight in improving that. I think Blattner, Cupertino, they're leaders in the renewable space. They've had long history, especially Blattner, long history with very strong developers, understand how developers think, how projects move forward, how projects don't move forward. I think as a result of that knowledge, they're able to manage their resources and equipment very smartly. We did have, as we talked about earlier this year, we did have a hiccup on a couple of projects. This sort of ramp up in growth that happened from 22, 23, 24, it was a lot, and there's obviously good things about it, and sometimes there's not so good things about it. And that sudden rapid growth did cause us to be inefficient in certain areas. But sitting here today, our expectation is things are going to get better. They will get better. There's no reason why going into 25 and beyond that we won't be reaching the margin targets that we laid out in the Investor Day in 22.
Yeah, Steve, I think it's really important with Quanta is it's a portfolio of projects. Look, 90% of them outperform how we think about it. We operate through contingencies. Every once in a while, you hear us call something out. Typically, I don't know, we'll call it out. But in general, we performed that quarter, we performed the year like we thought we would, but it's all about the scale and the way the portfolio works to de-risk the investor and ourselves against these kind of issues. Because, we're in inclement weather at times. We have imbalances at times, but the company's able just to operate right through that. And the first quarter is always a little light, and that's when some of these projects happen. But I typically we'll operate through, and I continue to believe our execution capabilities are better than they've ever been. Our engineering capacity, the front end of it, continues to get better. As we become more ingrained with the client and can talk about all the risk, as long as we can control those risk, I think, we love it. I've just seen, the farther, the more that we can take on and control our own destiny. Our vertical supply chain that we've built, I think certainly helps us as well, in these environments. And so all those things matter to de-risk company, and you have to look at it in a holistic manner in order to understand it.
And just one related question on the, in general, you don't have any mega projects, except SunZia is kind of somewhat of a big project. Just how's that one going, and just how do you think about the ability to kind of replace that business as you execute on it with more?
Yeah. We get a lot of questions about that. I'm not concerned at all. I think 25, 26, 27 are the magnitude of larger projects that you see in the queues and in MISO, SPP, all of them, the West. I think there's more projects, $1 billion-plus projects than we've ever seen in our career, exponentially. So if you believe all those move forward, which I do believe they will, I will replace it fairly easily. And I'm not concerned with the top-line growth. I will say SunZia, the amount of wind and what we've done there and the stations as well as just how we've looked at it holistically with the client, is somewhat proof of concept of what can be done. It can be done on data centers. It can be done across the board for us. When you start talking about data cities, things like that, gigs of power and generation and how you do that and can you do that? Can someone do that in a holistic manner? I think we can. And we didn't build any of those synergies in. We don't talk about them because I think we have to go out and prove that we can do this and do this in a way that's meaningful to the investor. And when we do one, I'll be the first one to jump up and down and say, "Hoorah, we did it." But I'm confident in our ability and our capabilities to deliver those things on time, on budget.
Okay. Well, last one for me before we open it up. Just one thing on the utility capital, you didn't mention, which maybe better than anybody, is the kind of resiliency and system issues. Obviously, you're part of implementing resiliency plans of different sorts and also dealing with the storms like we have now and managing that. So just be curious your perspectives on just what really works, what needs to be done to the utility systems to make them more resilient. You see, I'm sure utilities doing different things. Is there some perspective you have that what could make a real difference there and
Sure.
how much more needs to be spent to make the grids more resilient?
Yeah, it depends on the regionality of the utility, too. I think you have to look at where they're located, and also states, whether you're looking at environmental impact or what you're looking at. So what I will say is, four generations in the business, in the utility business, I've never seen it like what I see today. And when I say that, the amount of capital that can be spent that needs to be spent on the system is insurmountable in the trillions of dollars. And I can't even tell you how many trillions. I don't know. But you're talking about doubling the size of the transmission system over time. I mean, whether it's 2040 or 2050, it needs to double. And where you can really, really shape cost and security and all the things of the nation that's needed is through transmission and building it and bottlenecks and all kinds of different things that really, really make us more secure as a country, as well as secure and moving generation. And, you know, your generation factors are tighter than they've ever been. Maybe not ever. I don't know the history, but they're tighter for me as long as I've been in the career. I've just seen the capacity levels keep coming and sliding. And, you know, you used to have 20% factors. You're down in the tens and fives in areas. And I don't know. I don't like that. And I just think you're too close to the edge. And we have to build more generation. We have to get more transmission moving across regional authorities. And but if you're a utility, you're seeing EV penetration in the West significantly. About 70% of the EVs that are sold today are sold to the West. If that policy continues and we believe that EV is going to continue to penetrate, you're going to see what's happening in California with the incremental capital that has to be spent on the systems continue to go across on the distribution level. So it depends on where, that's why I'm saying it depends on where you're at, because you can defer some distribution spending if you're in other areas, but if you're in the West, the circuitry doesn't allow you to continue to add EV, because EV is going to take up, you know, capacity, and so you've got to build substations, build circuits that are larger than they are today, and so all the circuitry has to move up. How fast, it depends on, how fast we believe that penetration comes in. Then you have fire hardening, which you're going to do, and you have all the interconnections coming out of renewables coming to the West. So if you're in the West, but that factor is the same if you're in New Mexico or North Louisiana with data centers coming in. I mean, the load and what you see coming at you just continues to come from electrification of North America. So I think you have to really plan, and you have to make sure that you plan accordingly. And then as an industry, we've got to educate that there's an NPV to this, and the total energy cost comes down. At some point, it starts to go the other way. And I think that's the big thing in that. We've got to, as an industry, keep saying it. Yes, you have to spend this capital, but the returns are there long term. So that's my take on it.
Great. Well, let's open up for questions from the audience. Question here in the middle.
Two, please, if I could. First, is there any lull in your business? Is there any lull in your business project development as clients wait out the election outcome? Number one. And then longer term, as you think about operating leverage, the company has garnered operating leverage in the past. I might argue that you've improved some businesses, different divisions over time, and that has given you a lot of your operating leverage. But starting from today, as you look forward the next 3-5 years, do you still see operating leverage, or should we expect the majority of earnings growth to come from revenue?
Yeah, I'll take the first one. I think what we see with the election and all the things there, we're not really seeing, kind of a lull at all. Normally that would be the case to some degree. I think a lot of it has to do with the push on technology against it, no matter what the election looks like. So that demand they have against the grid, we're already behind. And so you can't sit and wait. Interest rate environments going down in this market is the biggest impact to the bill to the ratepayer. So when that goes down, if we continue to see interest rates go down, I it'll get more robust quicker. It's already pretty robust, but you could see a more robust environment if you continue to see interest rates go down. I already think they're down a bit, so I'm not really seeing this big lull per se. You're seeing projects move in, some move out a little bit. For different reasons, I do not think it's the election that's driving that. We're pretty agnostic to who's in. I mean, I think if you ask me, you didn't ask me, I'm going to tell you. If it's a Democratic, wins, you're going to see it be more robust, probably. But it's not to say you're not going to get growth either way, because I just think it's too much both sides, too many red states that are in renewables, too much technology, a lot of noise in the system. Either way, it's robust. Your policy, just the way EPA and everything else is under the Democratic environment where you're building a new plant and only operating at 50%, it doesn't make much sense to me. So I think some of those things are like hard to get your head around. And you can see that change a little bit. But the amount of demand, you can't build them fast enough at this point. And the second one, operating leverage, the growth drives that a lot. I tend to be a person that thinks we have 10 verticals and we ought to be on all of them right now. And so we'll have some capacity, but we can't get to every day something new comes in, another vertical of growth, and the way we look at it. So we are a little heavy at times. I do think there's operating leverage we can get. I mean, the country's extremely litigious right now for whatever reason. So your insurance rates are moving around on you pretty good. And it creates some issues within the company on that. But yes, I always think we can get operating leverage. We certainly are striving to do so, but I'll let Jayshree comment on the rest of it.
Oh, no, I mean, that's right. Thinking through, we've gotten, when we'll continue to get operating leverage with our capital, that's been a big driver. Working capital continues to be a push as well. So you're seeing all that in the ROIC. We are, as Duke was saying, some growth has pressured a little bit on G&A leverage, but you're going to see that hopefully come through here because some of the strategic initiatives we've been pushing through, we've incurred some costs as we're trying to learn through some of those and improve on those strategies. But those benefits should be coming in as well over the next couple of years. So short answer to your question is yes, I think we're going to see more operating leverage on different factors.
Other questions? Right up front. Right up front, right?
Can you talk a bit about how your growth plans have changed over the last 18 months or so, just in terms of the build-out of the large data centers? I imagine the growth plans you had 18 months ago were probably stale relative to what they are today. That's the first question. The second is in regard to labor. Any comments that you're seeing, any comments on what you're seeing in terms of labor inflation and availability, and you've been, I think, pretty creative in the past about how you've sourced prospective employees. How you're thinking about that going forward would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll go backwards. I think in general that the labor growth, as far as we've always been about 5-6% type escalations, and I think that's what we see today. I don't think, from my standpoint, we see any outward type labor issues. The data center piece, the low voltage piece, getting my head's around that. You could see outward stuff there, maybe, but I do believe the strategy we have with the colleges and the pre-apprentices and the things that we've done there, we can implement and create some better flexibility. The company's bigger. I think it allows us to do different things from a labor standpoint that Cupertino probably couldn't do standalone. And so going back to that, when you go back 18 months ago, you weren't thinking Cupertino was going to be acquired because it wasn't for sale. And so I think as these businesses – one thing I've seen in family businesses, the third generation is not one to come into business, especially the larger ones. And every one of them are getting a little bigger. They're going more into real estate and fun things, I guess, from their standpoint. So they don't want to be in the business as much. So it's going to provide us opportunities to look at bigger businesses. Your ESOPs are struggling to, so many people are retiring with the ESOPs, they either have to take huge debts. So you're seeing some ESOP-type transactions or big partnership-type transactions happen within the business that I wouldn't have expected. I do think the verticals, when we look at the front end of the business, the engineering capacity, always want to make sure that we have enough engineering capacity to meet the demand. So we certainly think that's a growth areas. And I, you know, every day we continue, someone's in the door on you know, how do we look at vertical supply chain? And, you know, that creates a lot of opportunity for us. Is our, we made the acquisition of Transformers. I think that has really gone well for us in that vertical supply chain and how we've taken that and used that to build. And we're not really a manufacturer, but we are. And we can create capacity in the transformer business. But if we're going to create capacity, we want to build it. We want to build what we're creating the capacity for. And I, you know, we're U.S.-based manufacturing. I think that's going to bode well. And, you know, I'm not worried too much on the ports and things like that, on the things that we're trying to accomplish. So it just gives us more verticals and more synergies across the business that we continue to, you know, outpace, get outward growth out of. And I, you know, honestly, I think that it, in 24 has been a hard year in many ways because it's getting ready for what, 25, 26, 27, 28, and that the balance in the system. You know, before hyperscalers came in at the level they've came in hundreds of gigs, it was pretty, you could see it. You could see a path. Like, when that came in, it just disrupted, like, everyone's plans, capital plans, all kinds of plans. And as that happens, with especially within the industries that we serve, any kind of imbalance like that creates noise in the system. So I think as that gets out into 25 and beyond, you know, you're going to start to see, you know, growth and predictable growth for a long period of time, multi-verticals for us.
Well, somehow we're already at the end of our time. I appreciate Duke Jayshree. Thank you.
Great report, Steve. Thanks for the interest.
Thank you.